I invite you to turn in your Bibles to John's Gospel, chapter 10. We'll be reading verses 1 through 15. And as we read these words today, we are turning again to another one of Jesus' own self-revealing statements, I am. And today we hear a progressive litany of various images. Jesus recognizing that those who are hearing are not quite tracking, and so he turns again and again with greater emphasis on what it is he is trying to communicate, not only about himself, but about the God with whom he shares an abiding and eternal relationship. Even more, the kind of people that we are made to be, as those who are made in the image of God. So hear these words. Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man who runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. May God bless the reading and the hearing of the word today. So today we're going to be looking at two of Jesus' sayings, two major themes. I am the good shepherd, and I am the gate or the door, depending on your translation, for the sheep. And these sayings are going to reveal much to us about how God cares for us. In Jesus' day, sheep pens were usually constructed of stone or sometimes wood. They had high walls all around, with just one entrance. And so sheep spent much of their lives traveling in and going out of that doorway. When they came into the gate, when they walked in through that portal, it was toward security. It was toward rest. A good shepherd who cared for the condition of the flock would take the time as the sheep make their way in. He'd inspect each sheep to make sure it was free of disease, to make sure it was free of parasites, to make sure it was free of injury. And if any of those things were present, of course, the shepherd would tend to them. And so from the perspective of the outside going in, that gate, that door, represents security. The gate is a way to security. But also, sheep would make their way from the pen to the outside world. That's where the world could really be enjoyed. The sheep could find pasture, the sheep could roam, the sheep could do what sheep do. They'd feel alive and enjoy the wide open space. From the perspective of going out from inside the sheep pen, that gate is the portal to enjoyment, to joy, to life. And so today we remember the Good Shepherd as the one who watches out over the sheep as they go out and as they come in. And maybe this can help us connect a little bit with how the Bible tends to talk about us as sheep. If you've ever met a sheep up close and personal, it doesn't always come off as the most flattering image. But when we take a step back and look at how sheep live, traveling through doorways in Jesus' time like this, it begins to make a lot more sense. Every one of us, I think, is constantly moving between that place of security toward something bigger and wider and greater, then going back to security again. And so this image makes a lot of sense to us. And if you think I'm exaggerating, and preachers, and I'll own this, love to exaggerate, be that as it may, ask yourself, when you go shopping, do you tend to take the same route around the grocery store? When you load the dishwasher, do you tend to load it kind of in the same way with the plates on this side, the bowls over here, the glasses over here? When we were all meeting regularly indoors, did you have a preferred spot where you like to plant yourself? When it's time for you to receive gifts, maybe your birthday or Christmas, do you receive something near duplicates? Because people say, well, this is what Christopher likes. And you end up getting more than one of the same thing, or at least variations on a theme. We walk these well-worn paths because they give us security. We take the same routes in life because they give us a sense of durability and sustainability. And at the same time, we always have on our minds those pastures that are elsewhere. We always have in mind something more or different or greater. If you're like me, maybe you've spent the last month daydreaming about that next opportunity for a vacation, a real vacation, a way to break out and go to the coast or go to the mountains or just go, however it may be. For those of you in working life, maybe you've turned over more than once now what it'd be like to take on another job. What would it take for me to reconfigure my life and my experience so that I could step into something new? Depart from what it is I've known. Have you ever thought about new opportunities in the same way someone who's incarcerated might think about a jailbreak to get out of the ruts, to get out of the routines? Then you too may be one who sometimes has the outdoors, the outside, the pastures, the more on your mind. You're not alone. It is part of our human condition to move between those places of security and those places of newness and freshness and vitality and life and challenge. And so like sheep, we also just go in and we come out. I think it's a good analogy for the way we tend to live our lives. We're in that constant flow between the search for familiarity and predictability on one hand, and then in the other hand, seeking some newness, some excitement, a break from those routines and those rituals that sometimes give us security and sometimes feel awfully confining. And so Psalm 121, 8 reminds us, the Lord will keep you in your going out and your coming in from this time on and forevermore. Can you hear it? God is very aware, tuned in, focused and watchful on our need for joy, on our need for abundance, on our need to feel alive. And God is very aware of our need for security and for comfort and for protection. So Jesus calls himself a good shepherd because he provides security and comfort in the lives of those who seek to live under his care. In fact, he says, his very life serves as a door, as a doorway. And that's where we find ourselves today, here in John 10, for the first 15 or so verses. And so some translations, depending on the one you're reading today, are going to translate that word, it's thura, in Greek, a little differently. But rather than trying to find the correct translation, I think each one gives us a bit of nuance and a bit of understanding, some perspective on what Jesus is trying to say here. So let's consider if Jesus is the gate. If Jesus is a sheep gate, we'd first probably find ourselves in a city, or we'd find ourselves in a town. And there, in more settled and established and well-built places, the sheep would be kept in pens, often made of stone that were attached to previously existing buildings. They'd sort of be cobbled on, adjacent to the other fixed construction. And so the pens would be structures with these high walls, enclosures that are managed by a shepherd. If not a shepherd, it would be some sort of manager, and the shepherd would rent the space. And the only way in and out of this kind of pen would be to approach the owner or the security guard or whoever was managing that property. And when people entered through the gate, they would pay the rent, as it were. The gate would literally be unlocked, opened, and then you would retrieve your sheep. If anyone came into the gate by a different way, you could bet they would be a thief or a robber. The surest sign of a thief or a robber is somebody who chooses not to come by way of the front door. And so Jesus lifts up this image, I think sensitively recognizing that someone who is setting out to steal a sheep probably isn't trying to hurt that sheep. No, a sheep is worthless if you can't resell it, unless you wanted to butcher it for meat. And so as these thieves make their way into the sheep pen, not only are they taking sheep that aren't theirs, but they want to use them for something else, for their own special interests. They use the sheep for their own gain, for their own advancement. Have you ever been in that situation in your life, in the midst of relationships? Maybe there are people in your life who came around you, came close because you're so generous. They know you're a gracious person. And the only time you really hear from them is when they need something and they think you can provide it. Maybe at heart you're a servant. Maybe you willingly and readily and instinctively just give of yourselves to serve others. You gladly help others, no matter what the task may be. But over time, you realize that there are certain friends in your life who seek you only when they are in crisis. Or maybe you're popular. Maybe you're successful. Maybe you hold a dignified title out there in the world. And you start to notice that the people who are around you come close to you because they tend to feel better about themselves because they're associated with you and your name or your prominence or your position. They're not trying to harm you. But at the end of the day, you start to wonder if that relationship would still be there if your position changed. I had a man join my church years ago, and he was one of the wealthiest people in town. Everybody knew it. His name was on a number of important buildings in the area. And when he joined the church, he and I sat down, and he owned his wealth right away, so to speak. He said, I have a lot of means, and I'll do whatever I can to help the church along, advance in its mission. He said, but please do not put me on the finance committee. And please do not put me in these positions of administrative authority. What I like to do is cook. And so anytime you need somebody to cook, I'm right there. If you need some money or something to help church along, you find me privately. We'll work that out. But what I want to do here is to serve others in this way that gives me great joy. How many people will take the time to listen to you, to find out what gives you the greatest joy and try and activate that part of you? Or are you surrounded by those who in one way or another are using you for their own gain? I think Jesus is showing us a picture of those kind of people and those kinds of circumstances. people seek other people out for all kinds of reasons, and it doesn't mean they're trying to harm them. But that self-interest tends to bleed into your life. But you can also tell when someone's interest in you is genuine. Have you ever been in a relationship like that? As rare as it may feel, their interest in you is pure and genuine. You know, deep down, I think all of us live lives that are really built on wanting to be loved, to be known, to be accepted. I was reminded of that in a church conversation this week with another minister who says, you know, before people can believe, they need to belong. And as our church continues to think through its own outreach, how seriously do we take that? Are we looking at those we meet kind of through that lens of what they can do for us? Or will we take the time to say, you belong because you are beloved? You belong because God has claimed you in Jesus Christ. All of the other things you might be able to do, well, that comes later. You have to belong before you can believe. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. Because he comes through the gate, he's paid the rent. He's put his very life, he's put his very body on the line for us. He's invested in us. We matter to him, not because of what we can do for him, but because of who we are and how passionately he loves that about us. It was just a few weeks ago when I asked you to complete that sentence in your own prayer time. I am. I don't know if you remember that exercise. And I suggest it was related to a theological thought that we are not just made by God, but we're made in a sense out of God. That God's invested and inscribed godliness in us. God has inscribed God's own image upon us and upon all humankind. So whatever describes God is really deeply written into us. Jesus believes in you because Jesus knows your true identity. And Jesus comes to protect and call that out of us. And so God says, I gave you a sense of humor. You can make people smile. I've put something in your life that shines. I believe in you. When I was in college, in a psychology class, our teacher began to talk to us about self-esteem and asked that question, what is self-esteem? And of course, all the students began to talk about self-esteem in terms of what we believe about ourselves. Self-esteem is what I believe about myself. And she said, well, sort of. But what about other people? So the students started graduating in another direction, and they said, well, I guess self-esteem is also something to do with what other people think about us. And she said, well, sort of. And as we continued to talk, we settled on a definition that was a little more sophisticated. Self-esteem is really not what we believe about ourselves, not entirely. It's not what other people believe about us entirely. It's what we believe other people believe about us. That's our working self-esteem. We tend to see ourselves through the lens of those who are most important to us. And so if it's our parents and what we think they think about us, that is going to determine so much of what we believe about ourselves. If it's our boss, if it's our spouse, if it's our children, if it's our teacher, it's all the same. That is going to determine what we believe about ourselves. What difference is it going to make for you if Jesus Christ is the most important person in your life? To remember that Jesus is fully invested in us, that we matter to him in his living, in his dying, in his coming back to us and rising. Jesus shows us that God is fully invested into us. He comes through the gate. Now, there are some other translations that also say Jesus calls himself the door for the sheep. The door. This offers us a different sort of shading. Now we have to go out to the country. We're out of the city. Things are not as settled. And so sheepfolds were more temporary arrangements, often still built with stone or with wood. But because they were less established, even though they had their high walls, even though they had their enclosures, they were not enclosures that could formally close. The door was actually a portal, a big open space through which sheep could freely roam back and forth. The threats now are threats like wolves and jackals and wildcats and foxes. The only way to keep the sheep safe then is for the shepherd to lie down right there at the door. There in front of that bare entrance with no gate, there's now an enclosure that's holding the sheep in simply by the presence of the shepherd and keeping the threats out. Sheep are restless. Sheep are restless by nature. They're easily startled. So imagine being a sheep that is kept awake at night. Perhaps you've driven by, you know, some of the agricultural fields over at NC State and seen the fainting goats. And you can holler at them and they just startle and faint. That's how easily startled they are. Gail Davis told me a wonderful book that when she was a deacon, she shared with me. It's by Philip Keller, who's an author. He's an agricultural researcher and in many ways has tried to live out his interest in very robust ways. So he was a shepherd in Africa for a while, and he wrote a wonderful meditation on this as an intersection with his own life of faith. A shepherd looks at Psalm 23. And in that book, he says that there are four conditions that a shepherd or a sheep needs to experience in order to be at peace. There, as the shepherd is at the door, I want you to hear these conditions. They must be free of fear, free of friction from the flock, free from parasites, and free from hunger. Maybe again you can relate to being a sheep. Have you ever had anything bother you so much that you could not rest? Have you ever experienced a real threat of a conflict that just won't go away? Something you're facing, friction that won't cool off? An issue that just keeps grinding on you and annoying you? You lie down, but your mind still races. Counting sheep in that situation does not help you. What helps the sheep to lie down? They can see the shepherd right there in the doorway. They know that between them and what they fear, the object of their worry is the shepherd. And so instead of focusing on that object of their worry, they can focus on the shepherd. And we tell that in such a way that we might believe that all of our stories end in tidy and easy ways, really clean, happily ever after kind of moments. We want God to do that for us. And as often as not, that is the experience of our lives. You may wake up one day and have that realization, my goodness, what was I worried about? God was with me all along. And there are times when the threats that we face do not spare us from pain. They don't spare us from the challenges and the difficulty that inevitably come. And it is in those times that we can also remember that we abide because Christ abides with us. It's impossible, I think, to read these statements of Jesus without turning also to Psalm 23. We know how the fourth verse of that psalm goes. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The two key operative words in there are though and through. They're separated by one letter. Leonard Sweet pointed that out. Though I walk through, though I'm facing this layoff, though I've received that diagnosis that makes me tremble to the core, though I see my children hurting, Christ is with me, and I will make it through. Years ago, when I was a chaplain intern, I was brand new on that job and was called into a room of a very long-standing patient. Had first come from far away to receive a transplant. The transplant did not go well, and they were trying to help the patient as best they could sort of recover through that, but things were getting worse and worse. By the time I arrived, I entered into that room and realized a couple of things. One, this patient was entirely alone. Because he had traveled hundreds and hundreds of miles to be a part of this, the family could not remain, and so they had gone back home. The church home and the community that had supported him all along the way was having to do it all from a distance. And when I went to see him, he was no longer responsive. And in some ways, I suppose that was mercy. Because the suffering that he went through was not something I would wish on anyone. It was almost like he was asleep. The other thing I noticed was clutched in his hand was one of these. I don't know if you've ever seen these. They're called palm crosses. And they're sort of gently shaved down to be really smooth, and you can just run your fingers and you can just hold it, grip it tight. And clutched in his hand for many days was a cross just like this one. So I went to visit with him as I prayed, as I read scripture over his life and his body with no chance of hearing his own voice. That cross was always in his palm. And when he died, the nurse had to kind of pry his fingers away. And I thought of Isaiah 46. I have inscribed you in the palms of my hands. That's how tightly God holds us. I said Isaiah 46. I meant 49:16. God gives us something to hold on to when we need to hold on the most. That's the question for us today. Do you have someone or something to hold on to in your life that reassures you of your worth, of your enduring value? Do you have someone or something that reminds you that when trials come, you will get through because you will never face them alone? Do you have the assurance of God's loving care in your going out and in your coming in? Do you know the good shepherd in the midst of all the noise, in your own minds, in your own heart, and in this world? If you quiet yourself enough and listen, you will hear his voice. Amen. And as we continue our service today, we do so in a time of response, listening for how God has called out of us a fuller life, living out the good and godly traits of character, of virtue, that are inscribed on us as children of God, being called out of us even now by the life of death and resurrection of Jesus. As we open our hands and practice our generosity, as we give our gifts to the church, do not let your response stop there. Let it begin there as you consider how you might respond to the voice that's calling into your life today. the voice of Jesus, the Good Shepherd.